Las Vegas, famous, fabulous playground of the West. A wide open town that never goes to sleep.
Vegas!
Vegas, baby, Vegas!
You're either in or you're out. Right now.
My best mates are going to Las Vegas this weekend. I'm told it's incredible.
Las Vegas, here we go!
Pack your bags and get ready for a different kind of Vegas experience with someone who knows Vegas inside and out. You're listening to Vegas Never Sleeps with Stephen Maggi.
Welcome to Las Vegas, a place that is suddenly associated with sports. First came the Vegas Golden Knights, an NHL expansion team that ended up getting to the Stanley Cup Finals. Coming soon are the Raiders, who will begin play in Vegas in just 1 year. And on the horizon, it looks like the NBA will be coming to Vegas soon, and maybe even Major League Baseball. Today, you'll hear about Vegas sports, starting with the sport that really started all of this, boxing. You'll meet one of the sport's best writers, Jeffrey Sussman, who will be releasing a book in May about boxing and the mob. You'll also hear from another fine writer, Steve Karp, discussing the Knights' second year in the NHL. As usual, you'll hear from our regulars. Eddie O, the wine guy, has been talking about the very difficult Master Sommelier exam over the last few weeks. Today, he talks about the very nasty attitude sometimes the test examiners have. On Luxury Living Vegas Style, Katie Medrano of Flipping Vegas talks about how she put together a team of some of the best Vegas realtors into an organization that can address anyone's needs, from first-time buyers to multi-million-dollar buyers and sellers. Brett Maley of Pawn Stars is back with his Vegas Art Minute. Today, Brett talks about what you need to know about art auctions. Finally, your Vegas insider, Scott Robin of VitalVegas.com, discusses something he hates but realizes Vegas does better than anyone else, and that's championship boxing. You know, boxing and the city of Las Vegas go together, much like strawberries and cream. There's nothing like a championship fight on the Strip. You can feel the excitement in the air as you're walking down the Strip at any time while the fight's in town. And one of the finest boxing writers in the world, our good friend Jeffrey Sussman, is with us today to discuss the special relationship between Vegas and boxing. And Jeffrey would like to also share a little about his newest book, Boxing and the Mob, which will be released in May sometime. Okay, Jeffrey, the mob has always been accused of fixing sports, especially boxing.
You know, it's one of the easiest sports to get involved in for the mob, simply because there are so few players involved. You know, it's difficult to fix a baseball or a football game, but it's very easy to fix a boxing match.
Yeah, and that's simply because, right, it's one person on one person, so you can get that. Or even the referees. I didn't realize when you're talking about in that book, it's real easy, and it can be done in such a way that it's pretty subtle.
It's very subtle. It can be done very easily, and the public usually doesn't have any idea what's going on, and even whatever authorities may be out there who are watching may not know what's going on.
People are going to love this book, Jeffrey, because it reads like you're reading The Godfather. I mean, some of the background information, I was fascinated by it, and it's not just strictly how boxing and the mob work together, but it also kind of tells you the background of the mob and mob in sports, which is one of those places, is just, as you say, and boxing is just the perfect example for it, where you can really do it in such a way that you can get away with it for a while.
Absolutely, and it happens time and time again.
You know, I remember the books with Graziano and about Max Baer and so forth. You see, they're trying to influence everything, and some people, I mean, you talk a lot about Jake LaMotta, which everybody's seen, The Raging Bull, which is a great movie, but
sure,
it's one of those kind of things where there was some ways you couldn't avoid it, right? I mean, they ran everything, so if you wanted a championship, you either had to play ball or they could just freeze you out.
Well, that's exactly what happened to Jake LaMotta. Initially, you know, he refused to go along with the mob and lose a fight, and he kept fighting and fighting and fighting and getting no place. So finally he agreed, and they said, you know, you're going to lose to Billy Fox. And it was such an obvious loss that everyone in the stand saw it, and they were booing and hissing and throwing things. And even then, it took another couple of years for LaMotta to get a shot at the title.
Yeah, and it must have just killed LaMotta because the one, you know, he was a lot of things, but one thing was he liked to win, and that had to drive him just crazy. It had to get into his very being, I would have imagined.
Yeah, and you know, something similar happened years later to Carmen Basilio. The mob tried to get into him as well, and he refused to go along. He absolutely refused. He said to his manager, you know, if you want to pay those guys to get them off my back, that's fine with me. It's not coming out of my money. You can pay for it. And Basilio was very courageous. He stood up against them and wouldn't let them walk all over him.
And then another thing in the book, which, quite frankly, I'll be honest with you, Jeffrey, I'd heard about this growing up as a little kid, about the Sonny Liston, Muhammad Ali, or at that time was Cassius Clay, all the controversy, and you really spell it out, and you realize something still might be amiss there. It's not that Ali was involved with that part of it, but Sonny Liston may or may not have.
Well, I don't think Ali was involved at all in that, but certainly, I mean, Sonny Liston, since, you know, his early years, had been controlled by the mob. You know, he grew up basically as a criminal, served a lot of time in and out of jail, and the mob owned a large piece of him. You know, when he was fighting Muhammad Ali in Lewiston, Maine, some people from Vegas wanted to go up and see the fight, and a well-known Vegas gambler named Ash Resnick said to a friend of his who was going up there, he said, "Don't bother going. The fight's going to be over before you get into your seat." So people in the know knew what was going to happen.
Wow. You know, and that brings up a whole other point when you talk about the mob and you talk about boxing and all the kind of troubles. How important is it to have the right trainer? Because I used to always hear about Mike Tyson was this great guy. Everything was there. And then once they got out of Customato's place and got in with some of these other people and the other promoters and so forth, is really when his career took a kind of a wrong turn.
Yeah, that happens to a lot of boxers. It's very important that one has as good a trainer as possible. You know, one of the good examples of that, which I wrote about in my book about Rocky Graziano, was his trainer, a man named Whitey Bimstein, who probably trained 100 fighters. And he was considered so good. He would do everything in his power to help a fighter succeed. And he never took a dime from the mob. He was just completely devoted to his fighters and would do whatever he could to help them succeed.
More with best-selling boxing writer Jeffrey Sussman in a few moments. Time now for Eddie O's continuing series on the Master Sommelier Test. Eddie, as America's first Master Sommelier, can you tell us why you continue to say that the Somms that administer the test are so difficult to deal with? What do they do?
What happens is they bring you in the room, and they're all smiling at you, very friendly, and they're trying to calm your nerves a bit. But then they reach out to a stopwatch, and they say, "Okay, Steve, when you pick up the first glass of wine, we start the stopwatch, and you have 25 minutes to, you know, tell us everything you can think of about these six wines." And you don't have that grid that you can follow and go down and deduct, you know, what's going on from the visual aspects and the aromatics and all. You have to memorize that grid. You have to just remember to comment on each of the six wines and go over the, let's say, more or less the 20 aspects that the judges are hoping you talk about. And so you got to be able to have that grid memorized, and you got to remember that on all six of these wines, that you've got to say something about each of these components that would be on the grid and not forget. And, you know, you can't, it's very difficult to remember to do that. And that's why candidates take this exam, I mean, 5-6 years in a row. I know one friend of mine who is from Chicago who has taken the exam 15 years in a row on the way up. And he started at the basic introductory, then became a certified, and then it took him a couple of years to pass the advanced. And, you know, and then it took him, you know, he had to take a couple of years off to do something else. He came back, took the advanced. I think he spent 7 years on the advanced, and he still hasn't passed.
Eddie O will be back next week. More with best-selling boxing writer Jeffrey Sussman in a few moments. When you visit Las Vegas, you're always looking for fun things to do, and I think one thing you got to put on your list is the Neon Museum. It's fantastic. What a way to learn the history of Las Vegas, but by the signs that go back all the way to the 1930s. The lobby, in fact, is a restored shell from the old La Concha Motel. It's a lot of fun. The staff there is incredible. Really unique Las Vegas experience, so you can learn the history and have a blast. Go to neonmuseum.org. That's neonmuseum.org. You are listening to Vegas Never Sleeps with Stephen Maggi, coast to coast on the BizTalk Radio Network.
The action is hot, the atmosphere cool, and the parking is free. The Orleans Hotel and Casino. Over 1,800 rooms, 70 lanes of bowling, an 18-screen movie theater, 8,000-seat arena, fabulous dining, virtual reality, a giant race and sports book, and the biggest stars are in the Orleans showroom. The Orleans Hotel and Casino. Two blocks west of the Strip, minutes from the airport, with rooms starting at $45. This is how you Vegas. The Orleans Hotel and Casino. Visit OrleansCasino.com. Now, let's return to Vegas Never Sleeps with Stephen Maggi.
You are listening to Jeffrey Sussman, author of some wonderful books on boxing, including a new book, Boxing and the Mob, which will be released in May. You know that book, Rocky Graziano, Fists, Fame, and Fortune, that you wrote? I'm telling people when they're really depressed about boxing or feel bad, that's a really feel-good book, because it gives you kind of some hope in boxing. It really kind of brought out some of the best traits of boxing. It's not all criminals. It's not all just people. You can kind of turn your life around. His story is fantastic.
Well, you know, I was talking to Rocky's daughter last week, a woman named Roxy Laurie, and she said, if it wasn't, boxing saved her father's life. If it hadn't been for boxing, her father's life would have been terrible. And boxing was the thing that turned it around. And the fact that he had a fabulous manager and a fabulous trainer added to that. And she said, you know, also, one of the things that people don't realize about a lot of boxers is what sweet and gentle guys a lot of them are outside of the ring. She said, you know, her father was just a big teddy bear after he retired from boxing.
Well, and that sort of happened to George Foreman. I mean, initially he was just, you know, full of rage and so forth. But there was that certain point after, like, when it seemed like his career was really done, where he had the comeback, and his personality seemed to take a complete change.
Right, right, exactly. And that happens to a lot of them.
Is that just because when you go through that, I mean, you know, you're around that world, Jeffrey. Is it one of those things where you start taking an appreciation for what you did and you start seeing the world? Because it's a lot of good and bad. I mean, it's kind of a microcosm of life.
That's exactly what it is. I mean, you know, boxing is sort of an existential contest for a man to test himself in a terrible way, in many ways, in that he's going into a ring and he's taking a chance that he's going to be badly hurt, and in the process he's trying to badly hurt an opponent. And these two guys have ultimate respect for each other, and they don't bear any animosity to one another. You know, Max Baer's son said to me that his father had terrific respect for the people that he faced in the ring. There was only one fighter who he personally disliked, and that was a man who was sort of like a dirty street fighter named Tough Tony Galento, who we thought was a miserable human being. But every other person he fought, he had tremendous respect for, and they had a lot of affection for him. You know, when Max Baer died, all of his pallbearers were men who he had faced in the ring, who had nothing but affection for him.
That's incredible. And, you know, you write about this. Boxing was one of the ways out of really difficult situations back at a time when it was tough to make it from the Jewish community or the Italian community or the Irish community. This was a way out, and it really was, we don't think of it that way anymore, but it really is was one way you could make it.
Absolutely. And you know, most of the boxers, with a few exceptions, came from very poor families. They were often the children of Irish, Italian, or Jewish immigrants, and it was the only way that they could make a decent amount of money. And a lot of them, once they made that money, they went on to have successful careers in other areas.
Yeah, exactly. Well, your Graziano book talks about him. He actually became a television personality, and it wasn't just making fun of him. He knew what he was doing. A smart guy, actually.
He was a very smart guy, and you know, as he said, that he probably made more money in the entertainment business than he did in the boxing business. But it was the boxing business that opened the door for him to become a professional entertainer.
Well, I did want to spend some time with you today talking a little about the really unique relationship between boxing and Las Vegas. And I mean, really, since the 60s, it's kind of become certainly one of the capitals, whereas before it was New York City. What is it about Vegas, besides just the obvious gambling thing? Is it because it's a kind of place that can do a big event? Does it just kind of fit with a big event of a championship fight?
Well, you know, when sports betting came to Las Vegas, it was natural that boxing would soon follow, and also, you know, with televised boxing matches and pay per view, boxing had an aura about it of excitement, of lights, of glamour that no place else in the country really has. It's a unique city with a unique aura. A special kind of glamour. In the days of Madison Square Gardens, it was a kind of seedy place, and you know, there would be there was a seedy bar up the block called the Neutral Corner, which referred to boxing. There was Stillman's Gym, which was so dirty that Lou Stillman never bothered cleaning the place up. Whereas Las Vegas, it's gleaming, it's shiny, it's vibrant. So it has all the qualities that lend itself to show business and to television, which Madison Square Garden in the early days never had.
You'll hear more from best-selling boxing writer Jeffrey Sussman in a few moments. Time now for Luxury Living Vegas Style with Gady Medrano, the star of Flipping Vegas, which can be seen on the DIY Network. Today's topic, more than just a realtor. One thing about you, and I see that you're putting together a team, the Gady Real Estate Group. What's that like? I imagine you're probably pretty sensitive, and coming from a family, by the way, that's been in real estate, so you know you've seen good and you've seen bad. What are you looking for as you try to put together this dream team?
Well, I already have it together, the Gady Real Estate team, Gady Real Estate Group. So I've already started that, and I have my top people. I have my senior agents that I rely on that are amazing, and they all range. There's some more high-end luxury just specifically for that market. There's some others that do high-rise condos just, you know, on and around the strip like myself. And then you have just investments, flips, all of that stuff. But I've had to actually turn away a few people, to be honest. It's something that they need to really be committed to what I believe is the right way to work with the public, which is with integrity, with commitment, and a real commitment to excellence as well, and being able to give just the highest level of service, no matter the price range. So I can get a little picky, but I also don't just. Sometimes it's just not the right fit because of also the level of experience or so, you know, things like that. There are other factors that I'll never just leave someone hanging. I treat them as I would treat a customer, so I make sure that they have recommendations and I can kind of help place them. So sometimes they're just not in the right spot, but they can be in another year or something like that. So I'm always interviewing people. I'm always meeting with people, and that's something that will continue to grow.
You can find out more about Gady at GadyRealEstate.com. Her name is spelled G-A-D-Y. I was talking to Your Vegas Insider, Scott Robin of VitalVegas.com, the other day about what people are telling him they want for a trip to Las Vegas. And he said they're looking for basically a good deal like they used to get back in the day in the 20th century and so forth. But you can actually find that now. The Orleans Hotel. Yep, they got a great casino, wonderful restaurants, everything from upscale stuff to the buffet to fast food. Everything you want. The prices are great. There's lower resort fees and free parking. Why don't you check it out? It's at OrleansCasino.com. That's OrleansCasino.com. You'll hear more from best-selling boxing writer Jeffrey Sussman in a few moments. You are listening to Vegas Never Sleeps with Stephen Maggi, nationwide on the BizTalk Radio Network.
Hey, what do you say? This is Paul Shortino from Raiding the Rock Vault, and you're listening to Vegas Never Sleeps with Stephen Maggi.
Welcome back to Vegas Never Sleeps with Stephen Maggi.
You are listening to best-selling boxing writer Jeffrey Sussman. Does it sort of relate to the coming of Muhammad Ali, where you know he started putting some of that heavy publicity? The fight was more than just a fight; it was the buildup and all that. Does that kind of go along with that, where kind of Vegas just fits that? I'm thinking of that last fight they had there with the MMA fighter. You know, a lot of people were excited about this boxing match. You know, quite frankly, they may never have watched a fight before in their lives.
Yeah, I mean, Muhammad Ali was a great showman. And he could turn any situation into an event where people would watch him. You know, even if he was going into a restaurant, a friend of mine who was an architect who designed and helped to build the Muhammad Ali Museum, I think it's in St. Louis, said that he was in a restaurant one night with Muhammad Ali, and as they were entering the restaurant, Muhammad Ali noticed a guy at another table staring at him. And Muhammad Ali went up to the guy and said, "You staring at me? You staring at me? You want to get into a fight with me?" And then he started laughing and patting the guy on the back and bought him a drink. But everyone in the restaurant turned their heads and was looking at him.
That's great. That's great. Well, Jeffrey, it's always great to talk with you. I can't wait. You'll be back on the show right before the book is released in May. And in the meantime, if people want to get a hold of either of those books, either the Graziano book or the Max Baer and Barney Ross book, both excellent reads, where do they go?
They can go to either Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
Absolutely. Just put your name in. They'll see whatever you've done.
Exactly. Yeah. If they just put my name in the search bar, the books will come up.
Thanks so much, Jeffrey. Really appreciate chatting with you.
My pleasure. It's always a pleasure chatting with you.
The subject stays sports. This time, it's ice hockey. We're with Steve Karp, the author of the very best book out on the Vegas Golden Knights called Vegas Born. It's available all over, and we'll tell you how to get it in just a minute. I want to talk about what the Knights are doing right now. Steve, as you watch this second season, are you getting the idea that the fans have much greater expectations than they had in that first season?
I think there is a lot of that. It was a lot of that going into the season. But I think the reality of the injuries with Stastny being out for a long period of time, Halla being out for maybe the season, Pacioretty missing a few games, just and of course Nate Schmidt's suspension, they came to the realization very quickly that this was not going to be the same season. Plus, you know, no James Neal, no David Perron. It's a very different look than last year.
But, you know, the fans, one thing I see this year as opposed to last year's, they seem like a real hockey crowd in the sense they know when the right times to cheer. They can see the breaks coming up there. That's just, I guess, the experience of going through a season of full NHL hockey.
Yeah, I think their education and their hockey IQ has gone up a few notches. They still need to be told on the scoreboard when to cheer and when they get loud. It's not Toronto, it's not Montreal, but you know what, they're learning, they're having a good time, and that's really what it's about.
Let's talk about the goalie situation, because I see there's always a controversy. Fleury is playing all the time, he's playing great and so forth, and the few games that someone's come into, he's had a couple of, you know, rough outings and so forth. But as you know, you can't play with just one goaltender. What do you think the situation, you know, people never want him to sit down, but eventually he's going to have to sit.
Well, in all fairness to Malcolm Subban, the Knights, he didn't play great. His defensemen and his forwards didn't play great in front of him. So you can't lay it all at his goalie pads. And I think he's played okay for the most part. And I just think they're trying to be judicious about when they play him. You know, Fleury has been riding a hot hand. He's been playing very, very well. And as long as he's okay and physically he's up to it, there's no reason to make a change and put Subban in.
So you don't think there's a fear then that they might wear him out by the time we get into the last part of the season?
You know what? Fleury does a great job of keeping himself in shape. And as long as he's physically up to it, he's going to want to play the bulk of the game. So they'll rest him. I mean, he'll sit from time to time, but he's going to play the bulk of it.
How do you see this thing going? Some people were worried that they weren't going to make the playoffs because they weren't there in Thanksgiving. It seems crazy to me.
Well, look, people go through stats and they see, you know, that 80% of the teams make the playoffs if they're in playoff position on Thanksgiving Day. And there's always exceptions to everything. And you know, this team has not been whole all year, and it's not going to be. So they've adjusted. I think Cody Eakins done a great job on that second line. Tuck has certainly evolved into a really big-time player for this team. And, you know, having Nate Schmidt back has really helped everything settle down. So I think a lot of it will depend on health. A lot of it will also depend on guys like Riley Smith getting going and starting to score. They need to get more scoring out of him and also get some scoring out of their third line, whether it's Nosek, whether it's Ryan Carpenter, if Daniel Carr remains up with the team, whoever. They've got to get more scoring. It can't just be three or four guys doing the offense and carrying the load. So that's going to be the key to how far they can get up in the standings and try to lock into a playoff spot. I mean, it's doable, but they also have a lot of work to do.
Well, you know, there's certain adjustments like Patch Ready and so forth. I mean, and this is not unusual. I see Eric Carlson's having some of the same issues up in San Jose.
You know, he has, and he's one of the five best players in the game. Max Pacioretty's not. So it does take, there's a period of adjustment at every player, whether you're a star like Carlson or a really good player like Pacioretty. You have to make adjustments to your game and fit in with your teammates both on and off the ice. It's not something that you can rush.
Well, the last season was incredible, and the book you wrote is just a fantastic thing. I mean, you won't be able to put it down. This isn't just, though, for the extreme hockey fan. You don't have to know hockey, you know, read the hockey news for 20 years to understand what you're writing, though.
Yeah, you know, I tried to write this book, Vegas Born, The Remarkable Story of the Golden Knights, for four different sets of fans. I think I told you this the last time I was on with you. It is for the Golden Knight fan. It is for the hockey fan. It's a great sports story, so if you're just a sports fan who likes a really cool story, you want to read this book. And if you live in Las Vegas, you don't even like sports. But if you remember what happened on October 1st, 2017, we go into great depth about how the shootings impacted the community and how the Knights helped the city heal. And I think that's a very important part of the book. And it definitely is the kind of book that it's easy to read. It's got a nice flow to it. I'm not saying that because I wrote it, but I did intend to write it in that fashion so it would be easy for people to follow the season.
More from author and beat writer Steve Karp in a moment. Time now to talk with Brett Maley of Pawn Stars and Art Encounter. Today, Brett talks about one way to buy fine art. I wanted to get your take on auctions because I have a feeling that's a bad place for a real amateur in there. And the very notion of any kind of auction, if you don't know what you're dealing with, you can get caught up in the excitement about that. What do you recommend if somebody says, yeah, I'm going to go to an art auction, you know? How do you recommend approaching it?
Yeah, art auctions are kind of fraught with some issues. I mean, you know, first of all, you want to make sure whatever auction you're going to is an ethical one because there's all sorts of auctions where they'll have shills and things like that in the audience, people that are bidding up items. You have to be aware of that. But and you also want to make sure that you have a look at the item. A lot of times, I'd be real leery of any sort of auction house that doesn't want you to see the item or inspect the item beforehand until it gets up there on the block. So you want to make sure you have a good sense of the item. You want to make sure that it's described accurately. You want to inspect it yourself. Use your own eyes and not the verbiage and the fancy words of the auctioneer.
What about people always think about Sotheby's? You know, that's one of the real famous ones. People have asked me, and I really don't know the answer to this, do they tend to be more expensive there? I would imagine they tend to get a more affluent audience, but is there any difference between the big names like that and maybe smaller auction houses, that kind of thing?
Well, what you get at the big name auctions, the Sotheby's and the Christie's, are the biggest ticket items. And the nice thing about Sotheby's or Christie's especially is you know whatever comes up on the block is going to be 100% vetted, authenticated. It's going to be the creme de creme of the art world. And you can take solace knowing that it is what it's supposed to be. Now, if you take chances at regional auctions or you go to a local charity auction, what the auctioneer says it is and what's, you know, pieces presented to be, you know, you're really rolling the dice in a lot of respects. So that's why people pay a premium at Christie's or Sotheby's, because again, it is the top of the pyramid.
Don't forget to check out Brett's incredible gallery in Vegas. It's called Art Encounter, which you can find online. And if you call them and mention Vegas Never Sleeps, they'll send a limo to your hotel to pick you up. You are listening to Vegas Never Sleeps with Stephen Maggi, nationwide on the BizTalk Radio Network.
The action is hot, the atmosphere cool, and the parking is free. The Orleans Hotel and Casino. Over 1,800 rooms, 70 lanes of bowling, an 18-screen movie theater, 8,000 seat arena, fabulous dining, virtual reality, a giant race and sports book, and the biggest stars are in the Orleans showroom. The Orleans Hotel and Casino. Two blocks west of the Strip, minutes from the airport, with rooms starting at $45. This is how you Vegas. The Orleans Hotel and Casino. Visit OrleansCasino.com. You're listening to Vegas Never Sleeps with Stephen Maggi.
You're listening to Steve Carr, longtime Vegas sports writer. Now, you're being humble, but it kind of reminded me a little of Moneyball in the sense that you took kind of what the Moneyball was to Billy Beane. You kind of did, well, here's how you do an expansion team, and kind of from the very start, even getting it to where it got.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people don't realize what it took to get this team here. You know, Seattle got its team today, and they kind of followed the template of Vegas, you know, with the season ticket deposit drive, the marketing campaign to get interest, showing the league they were serious about an arena. So a lot of the things the Golden Knights did, we saw in Seattle, and I think that is a very important part of this book, how Bill Foley and the Maloofs helped bring hockey to Vegas. It was a long path and a hard road. I remember they had Quebec City also vying for a franchise, and the NHL chose Vegas, and I think they're very happy ultimately with the way the decision went down.
I think some of the people that read the book that think this was just a no-brainer and Vegas was just ready for a team, you kind of give a different story. It was a struggle and they had to prove something.
Well, you know, there was no NHL hockey history here. There certainly was hockey history in the minor leagues, but not even close with the NHL. I mean, it's one thing to root for the Las Vegas Wranglers at New Orleans, where a ticket's $15, $18. It's another thing to make a five-year commitment of several thousand dollars a year for an NHL franchise. And a lot of people stepped up and did do it. And they proved to the NHL that they would support the team, support the league, and support the sport. Remember, they've done a lot of initiatives, you know, behind the scenes with youth hockey, with sled hockey, for disabled adults and kids. They've really worked very hard to connect and start grassroots programs throughout the city. They've got floor hockey in the curriculum in the junior highs here. So they're exposing a lot of kids, their next generation of fans, to the sport.
Well, it's an incredible story. Let's tell people, first of all, where they can get the book, Vegas Born. It's really a must-read. Even if you don't like sports, you'll like it. Well, where do you get it?
It's pretty easy. Just go to our website, which is VegasBornBook.com. You can order it online from several outlets. BookLocker.com, our publisher, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and if you live in Canada, you can go to Indigo and Chapters. We have all the links for you. We have a hardcover that goes for $28.95. We have an ebook that goes for $9.99. So if you want to spend the big money, but you still want to get the, and you get the book right away if you get the ebook version, by the way. And if you order the hardcover, you'll get it in time for Christmas. So there's plenty of time still to order it. And I think it makes a great gift for, like I said, for a hockey fan, for a sports fan. And if you live in Las Vegas and you just want to know, and if you live in Vegas, by the way, the book is available here at T-Mobile Arena at the Armory, the team store, and three Barnes & Noble locations in Las Vegas, in Summerlin, and in Henderson. So you can go to any of those stores.
You can also read Steve daily at sinbin.vegas and at gamingtoday.com. Time now for your Vegas insider, Scott Robin of VitalVegas.com. He talks about what we talked about earlier today, boxing.
Well, it's still a big deal. It still can kind of overwhelm the conversation. You get, in the case of McGregor and Mayweather, it really was just a circus that Las Vegas specializes in. Did anybody think it was going to be a great fight? Who knows? Like, did it matter? No. It was just everybody gets whipped up into a frenzy. It's fantastic for Vegas for a number of reasons, because it is a high-profile international event. Room rates go through the ceiling. Occupancy goes through the ceiling. Casino revenue goes up. Every taxi, Uber, Lyft, you know, everybody's busy. Everybody's happy. It doesn't happen every day. It could happen, you know, twice a year, but when it happens, it shows off Vegas in its best light. There's an influx of people just interested in the city, and the boxing experience only lasts a couple hours, but before and after and the day after and you know, several days later, people are still here and they're still having fun and they're checking out all the other things to do. It's not the only show in Vegas. It's the one I appreciate the least because it's a sport. But I figure if those folks are here, come check out a Cirque show, come check out a comedy show, go into the casino, go, you know, bowling, whatever you want to do, you can do it in Vegas.
What I don't get about that, though, is, and you're right, the rates go through the roof and all these people come in. You know, there's only 18,000 of them that are going to be at the fight. What are all these people coming in just to be here?
Yes, it's absolutely that FOMO. All the kids talk about it, right? FOMO, fear of missing out. It's, you want to be a part of the party. You want to, even if you're not going to the event, there's viewing parties. There's just parties in general. There's after parties. I think McGregor actually has a residency now with one of the nightclubs where this guy who was boxing 2 hours earlier is now going to come in and push a button and play a song like he's a DJ or something. But there's ancillary excitement, and you just feel like you know, like if you're going to do the Super Bowl, if you can't be the Super Bowl, go to Vegas. You're going to be in a sports book. Everybody's excited. Everybody's got money on the game. When people have money on the game, they're 10 times more excited. Win or lose, you're just going to have a different kind of time if you do it in the context of being in Las Vegas.
Make sure to check out Scott's blog, VitalVegas.com, every day for updates on the ever-changing news of Las Vegas. Well, thanks for listening. Next week, you'll meet a true talent who can be seen at a number of spots all over Vegas, Peter Pavone. Have a great weekend. This is Stephen Maggi reminding you, Vegas never sleeps.
Times are changing. The circus of politics, healthcare's low standards and high prices, and let's not forget food quality. What to do? Arm yourself with Life Change Tea at GetTheTea.com. In a world of chemical imbalance and poor air and water quality, it's time you make a move. Log on to GetTheTea.com and stock up on organic non-GMO supplements. Don't forget the tea. GetTheTea.com. Cleansing your body never felt so good. And we have a brand new tea called Takedown Tea, which helps support healthy glucose. All natural body support so you can be at your best, naturally. All you have to do is log on to GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. We're not a fad that comes and goes. We are the real deal. Join us and armor up. GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Changing America's health, one tea bag at a time.
The action is hot, the atmosphere cool, and the parking is free. The Orleans Hotel and Casino, over 1,800 rooms, 70 lanes of bowling, an 18-screen movie theater, 8,000-seat arena, fabulous dining, virtual reality, a giant race and sports book, and the biggest stars are in the Orleans showroom. The Orleans Hotel and Casino, 2 blocks west of the Strip, minutes from the airport, with rooms starting at $45. This is how you Vegas. The Orleans Hotel and Casino. Visit OrleansCasino.com.